Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the IT for the Care Continuum Task Force. This is now our second meeting this week, so moving right along. We'll jump right into the agenda today, but first we'll start with roll call. Carolyn Peterson.
I'm here. Good morning.
Chris Lehman.
Good morning.
Aaron Mary. He did indicate he's going to be a few minutes late. Steve Waldron.
I'm here.
Chip Hart. Chip on yet? Not yet. Okay, and Sue Cressley?
Here.
Great. All right, I will turn it over to our co-chairs for a few opening remarks before we dive into our pediatric recommendations.
Thanks, Lauren. This is Carolyn. I just wanted to wish everyone a good morning. I hope you've had a good week. I'm really excited that we're able to start diving into the recommendations and forming our comments for submission to ONC. And I'm happy to hand the mic over to Chris. Are you on mute, Chris?
Thank you, Carolyn. You were absolutely right. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Carolyn. I am excited to actually go to work. Last Wednesday, we talked about the recommendation as they currently exist, and we had a chance to get some walkthrough in regards to existing regulations and standards by AL. And today we will actually have the opportunity to talk about these recommendations, look at their feasibility, implementability, and talk about modifications or limitations of these recommendations. So I'm excited for the ONC staff to get us working.
Great. Okay, should we move on?
Sure. This is Samantha Meckler, and Laverne and I are also listed at this part of the agenda just to welcome you all and thank you in advance for the hard work that we are about to roll up our sleeves and get started. A little bit in terms of process, as we start to do this, I want to thank Stephanie Lee in advance for making the ambitious effort to try to capture some of the discussion in real time. That's always a challenge. Just to let work group members know, obviously there'll be time to modify, revise. There may be some parentheses for placeholder, but it's more of a prompt and an aid for our discussion. We're also going to start to apply and utilize the content in the technical worksheets that we walked through the other day and focus on the scope of the questions for the recommendations. So I want to thank everyone in advance for their commitment and their input. Again, we have an ambitious agenda. I think our aim today, Steph, is to work through the first five recommendations. Is that correct?
Yes. That's correct.
Okay. So that provides roughly, 12 minutes or so per recommendation. So you may see we'll try to facilitate or move us along as we see fit. There's obviously always opportunity to think through this, give input on some of the notes, and we can share that as part of the subsequent discussion as well. Laverne, did you want to offer some remarks?
Good morning, everyone. I'm thankful that you all are with us as we embark on this new effort, and I'm glad to work with you.
Okay. So we will turn this over to our chair and our co-chair to really guide and facilitate this discussion. We are available here to help provide clarifying information, subject matter expertise as may be needed or useful. And again, we thank you in advance for your focused effort and time today.
Okay, so I don't know, is Stephanie going to start screen sharing now? Do you just want to move over to that screen?
Sure. Do I click a prompt or to share it or? Okay, wait, I see it.
Yeah, I want to thank everyone as you bear with us. We really, we're virtual and we are very much, this is a working session, so we want to try to get some of the typing screen up here. And as Steph is doing that, again, we're really working through those technical worksheets. So hopefully that document is handy for folks. And what we have is a template where we'll be capturing some of the discussion today. Again, there are four overarching questions for each of the recommendation, and we'll be starting with the first question of focus is listed as question three in the worksheets, and that is, should any of the recommendation not be included as part of the voluntary certification of pediatric health IT? And then looking at the following question, which really looks at the functional criteria that was listed for the existing and proposed new or updated criteria, if any of that was felt not to be a correlated item to support that recommendation.
So, Stephanie, the two Word documents are a little small.
Yeah, I was worried that happened with the split screen.
Okay.
Switch back and forth.
Do one screen then, Steph, and people can refer to the hard copy?
Yes. Has this gotten big enough?
If you could zoom in, maybe at 150 or 125.
I'm sorry?
Sure. Does that look better?
Yep, that's a little bit better.
Okay. I apologize.
I'll try 200.
My phone line just dropped, so this is Chris. I'm back online.
So thank you, Chris. We were really just trying to get oriented here to get figure out the best way to view some of this real time. And I just did a refresh to have the technical worksheets handy for folks and a recap of the four overarching questions.
Yep. So it looks good now, Steph.
Okay, thanks. I guess we can get started on the discussion. Chris, if you want to lead us through this.
Absolutely. So if you recall, the connection, losing the connection also lost my outlook and other things. But if you recall, the first item on the topic is the use of biometric specific norms for growth curves. So that included the ability to record the patient's weight, and according to the age, which is calculated automatically, the ability to display these weights and body mass index and height in growth curves from the CDC and the World Health Organization that reflect age-specific norms. And the ability to also display percentiles. That was the recommendation, if I recall it correctly. And, when we were talking about this on Wednesday, one of the things that occurred to me, I'm a neonatologist by training, and it's not unusual for children who are premature for the first 2 years to have their age corrected. So one of the things that occurred to me that is missing from this recommendation is the ability to correct for adjusted gestational age. And the other thing that occurred to me that wasn't included in our recommendation is the ability to have growth charts that are disease specific. And I'm throwing this out and see how the committee feels on that. But especially when it comes to things like Down syndrome, there exists data for growth charts for children with Down syndrome. The ability to include that in the EHR seems to be something that might have value to pediatricians. And I'm going to stop here and see what others think about this particular recommendation.
Okay, we're going to jump on you, Chris. This is Sue, and I will just tell you that the problem with all of those things that you just mentioned, while they have incredible value, is the normative data sets are not in the public domain. And so there is no ability for the EHR to be able to relicense and some of the disease specifications. So part of this we have to figure out is there are multiple ways of displaying this information and calculating it with the EHR. So, for example, we actually draw our own growth curves based on the CDC's normative and WH because they have huge data sets. So you can actually draw beautiful curves with their data sets. You can't do that with some of the others that don't have as many points of data because if you look at what's written in the literature for, let's say, Down syndrome or Turner's or whatever, those are actually hand-smoothed curves that were sort of extrapolated by the people who did the research. There's not a big enough data set to actually draw the curve within the EHR. Now, there are other EHRs who basically scan a picture of the underlying growth curve and plot a point on it. And I don't think that we can be specific enough to tell different EHR companies how to do it. I think that we have to start with what are big enough in the public domain data sets, which is WHO and CDC. And they have to be smart enough to know that you can't use the WHO curve after age two because there aren't data sets there. And there should be validation checking of not only can you do it, but is the number actually right? Right, because I've seen people who've done this poorly, and when it's done right, the percentile comes out 29, and in another one it comes out 12. So it's not enough to draw the curve. You have to be giving, because physicians are using this for clinical decision support. So we have to make sure that they're getting the right information, not just a display of the information. That's my two cents.
Yeah, and I've got a little bit to add, if that's okay.
Yes.
All right. I concur with Sue because, boy, that our two companies have had to deal with this in spades. I know from some research that the only other data set that I'm aware of that exists that has enough data to do this properly is the licensable AAP. I'm sorry. There's also a preemie data set. There are other licensable ones, and I don't know what the reach or appetite is for ONC to require vendors to license and stuff. However, I think the most important thing we can do here in terms of these alternative data sets is to require vendors to cite their data. I have seen, and I should also add, the AAP has a position paper already written, I can get you the reference, where they say, do not use these other disease-specific charts because the data sets are so bad. The original, the old Kronk Down syndrome growth charts are based on like two dozen kids and as Sue pointed out, a totally hand smooth and from a data perspective, not appropriate result. And so if that's still, like Sue said, if a vendor wants to overlay some data on top of someone else's visualization, that's fine. But I think it really needs to be cited. Where is this data from, and you know what is the source? Because I think that's important. Also, in the worksheet, there's a reference to the model child EHR format, where the request is for an alert for when a child is more than two norms outside the expected range. And although that's a valuable alert, I don't think that's a particularly important one. And the reason being, I don't know any pediatricians who wouldn't spot that right away. What's more important to me and to my clients, according to my clients, is that they get alerted when a child changes more than a deviation or some other value. Because by the definition of the alert that the model child EHR format, a kid could go from literally 175% BMI to 75% BMI and no alert would happen. And when in fact a swing of 110 to 90 should set someone off, even smaller. And so from an alert perspective, I think it really needs to focus more on the change than a data error, because those tend to get fixed. So those are two points I'd like to add to this one.
Thank you so much, Chip and Sue. I think these are valuable comments. And they show that we are far away probably at this stage from disease-specific norms. And, you know, if you don't have adequate data, then you can't really implement that. That leaves, however, two remaining edits that I think we touched upon briefly. I mentioned adjusting the gestational age for former preemies to reflect their appropriate place in the chart. And the other that Chip just brought up, a recommendation for a significant change, which, by the way, could be a measurement error that then could lead to dosing errors downstream, but it also could be a change in the child's condition. So an alert to significant changes in the weight or height of a child. Are there any other thoughts and opinions on this?
Yeah, I'm going to push back here again. That's why you invited me to the party, Chris. So just let me tell you that you can't correct if you don't have preemie curves. So if a kid's 24 weeks gestation and they're now 30 weeks gestation, where do they go on the curve? Unless you incorporate preemie curves, which again are not in the public domain in a way that can be consumed easily by EHRs. I mean, I can tell you our product does it, but we've done it with a relicensing and some other stuff. But I don't think you can stick that, as much as I think it's incredibly valuable, I don't think we're there yet.
I'm with Sue. We're in the same boat.
And there is no agreement of the subject matter experts about when to stop correcting. So without good subject matter agreement on when and how to use preemie curves, I don't think this is prime to ask vendors to incorporate. And then I want to go back to the alert for change.
Before we go there, Sue, let me push back. If the recommendation were there that you should adjust once a preemie reaches term age, so for its adjusted weight, so that you could use the regular curves, would that be something that you would consider feasible and doable, and would it have value?
I don't think it has value without the context of the first. You know, at what point, you know, do you sort of, like, to me, we really should be using WHO until age 2 and then CDC afterwards. It's like asking us to adjust, but then what do you do before that kid's that age? It's solving half the problem, but not, I mean, I know where you're going, and we can do it, but I'm trying to not make the perfect the enemy of the good here.
Yeah, I think we all agree, and I do appreciate the pushback. All right, then you wanted to go to the alert for significant changes.
So what's an alert? And now you're starting to we don't even have a consensus in the industry of what does an alert mean, right? So to me, being able to visualize the curve should be the medical decision making tool that people use. Because unless you say to an EHR company, and I say to my developers, if there's a delta of X, well, that delta of X is different based on the clinical scenario, right? If I have a kid in the first 6 months of life whose delta is, you know, X percent, that matters more. The first 2 weeks of life, everybody drops 10%, right? So what's the threshold? And is it higher or lower? What if a kid's actually getting better and it's a failure to thrive kid who was at the fifth percentile and now they're finally doing better and that they're 25th? Do I want an alert? I think this is hard to tell programmers how to develop, but there should be a visual display where they can see it on the underlying growth curve in a way that then people should look at it and then we got to decide what alerting is, right? To me, alerting is not a pop-up. That's what it is to everybody, a lot of other people, right? It's a visual display that makes it obvious that I should do something. And if you have a growth curve and there, you see a point going at a scatter point going up, down, or sideways, that to me is alerting. Because otherwise, you're going to have to get so granular about, you know, from 0 to 6 months of age, it's this percent. From this, you know, what if you have an obese kid who's losing weight? I think
Sue,
that rabbit hole.
I agree with Sue, And the only thing, and Chris, we're going to run into this a lot. One of the things that the EHR developers need is computable, evidence-based guidelines for this stuff. So when I sit and talk to a pediatrician directly, they can give me a very reasonable explanation for what they want out of their alerts. And I'm like, okay, we can do that. But the next pediatrician does something different. And then the next pediatrician does something different. And what we really need is we're going to be pushing back for some consensus about what the actual evidence-based guidelines should be. And as soon as someone says, Bright Futures, the Academy, says 10% swing at this age group or kids with these diagnoses should trigger something, that's we can work on that. But it has to be something that we're driving the pediatricians to, not something that is so flexible as to be useless. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, and let me sum up this discussion. The one thing that I heard loud and clear is that this recommendation must include a visual display because it will serve for pediatricians and family practitioners who are used to taking care of children as a visual alert that there might be something wrong in either measurement or in the child that needs to be addressed, and that is sufficient at this current stage. And the other thing that I hear loud and clear is we need to make sure that we limit this to data that are in the public domain and are evidence-based and can be used to create this visual display.
Hey, Chris, this is Steve Waldron. Just a couple other comments. So one, I think we should be very clear about separating out the data and the access to the data needed to generate these biometric norms from the display and that piece of it and the alerts and all that kind of stuff. Because based on the conversation today, it sounds like we're needing to have access to that data and be able to aggregate that such that we can create these large data sets of what are accurate norms with, you know, thousands and thousands of kids. Based on, you know, disease specificity. So that notion about things down below on the worksheet that talks about the core data set and expanding that, I would encourage us to make sure that we expand that to everything that we need to be able to do kind of everything that you talked about relative to this particular recommendation. The next thing is I think we can separate out the capability of an EHR to leverage rules and execute rules from actually embedding the rules inside the EHR. So a lot of the conversations like, well, when do you adjust for gestational age? Well, I think there's an opportunity there to be able to have these the products that would be able to set rules to say each pediatrician is able to say this is when you would want to do that adjustment and this is when it would end. But that piece now gets to my last question, which is a little bit different, and it's about all these recommendations. One thing that I'm not crystal clear on is what is the signal to the market for a product that has undergone the voluntary certification in pediatrics? Is it that this is safe to use for kids? Is this that it will support all the functionality that you need as a pediatrician? Is it these are the core safety issues and quality issues that need to be part of a core piece? That would help me better understand in regards to which one of these should and shouldn't be here, and these expansions that we're talking about, should they or should they not be part of the recommendations?
Okay. That's a great question. I was just pulling up, trying to pull up the original legislative intent in 21st Century Cures. But if I recall correctly, is that we are to provide a set of recommendations that are considered part of the minimally viable EHR product in order to take care of children. Would that work for you?
Yeah, that's fine. And I guess I'm not as concerned about what is or is not the definition, just that we're kind of in agreement with what the definition is. And I think that's a very good definition. So again, that helps me say like, well, I think having access to the data, having the access of the visual, that's probably where we need to be in these notions of the alerts and this decision support piece, while very helpful, probably is not that minimum viable.
Okay.
Can I, if I can add to that, go ahead, Sue, go first.
Well,
Sue and I both participated in the model child EHR format, and one of the struggles that I know we had was not simply the distinction between is this a pediatric function or not a pediatric function, because that's it's an interesting conversation. The other big one is this an inpatient function or an ambulatory function? Because those are very different things, and sometimes. And that, you know, the child model EHR format is filled with inpatient needs, the neonatal needs, all of which are totally valid. But it's also a very different and specific segment of the market. And to create a certification that says this is the minimally, you need these functions minimally to be a supportive EHR, you know, pediatric EHR, I think we might want to bifurcate that a little bit more, because clearly what Sue and we might do to support pediatrics is very different from what a children's hospital is going to do.
Thank you, Chip. That was a really important comment. And I think that is actually a point that we need to clarify with ONC. When embarking on this, my perception and impression was that we are focusing on EHRs that are used mainly in outpatient settings. You know, the assumption would be that inpatient EHRs will reflect that these functionalities as well, but that the target for this certification are EHRs that are used in pediatrician and family practitioner's office. And I'll just turn this over to ONC and see if that's the perception on your end as well.
So this is Sam. I appreciate all the discussion and comments. To be clear, the ONC is not establishing a separate certification program for pediatrics. Rather, we are focusing on pediatric health IT voluntary certification criteria. These recommendations are some of the top clinical priorities that stakeholders have worked through over the years, many of which clearly align with the EHR format, which has been focused on the ambulatory setting.
Well, and we are going to need to come back to this. And the only reason is, for example, one of the 10 items on our list to associate the maternal clinical and demographic information with the child, that is purely a hospital-driven thing. That's not something Sue and PCC, we've done that forever because of the way our systems work. But that's a problem that exists at a hospital level, not at an ambulatory level.
No, and we can, when it comes to implementing these in different pediatric practice settings, these considerations are important and should be noted, particularly as we think of having resources or implementation type tools for informing, adopting these in different pediatric practice settings along the lines of this discussion. So thank you for your input. Can I just to do a quick time check, it is 9:30. My understanding based on this discussion is there seems to be a consensus to retain recommendation one for pediatric health IT of voluntary certification criteria. And I just wanted to get the pulse of the group that understanding is correct and that aligns with really the first question. Should any of the recommendations not be included? I didn't hear anyone indicate that this should not be included. Next, in looking over the bulleted criteria, as it aligns with existing certification criteria or as it aligns with proposed new or updated certification criteria, is there anything that has been identified that should be removed?
Thank you for not only keeping us closer to time. It's the first recommendation. I figured we would discuss some issues that are more of a global scope. But this nice summary, I think that's the consensus I also heard, that the recommendation remains in and that it needs some clarification as informed, as discussed, like the visual display and the limiting it to publicly available data sets.
Are there diverging opinions? Are there other opinions?
Nope.
Nope.
Thank you very much. Unless someone identifies an existing or proposed criteria to that they believe does not correlate or support this recommendation, we will presume that they should all be retained as listed.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Yep, I agree.
This is Aaron, I agree.
You get bonus points. I can never type when people are watching.
So Steph is pretty amazing, and I, again, want to thank her. This is not an easy task to do real time. Thank you, Steph.
No problem.
Plus, I think I swear too much on my computer because everything autocorrects to something inappropriate, so good for you.
See, now if we had artificial intelligence, all of our thoughts would just automatically get to the right answer and we wouldn't have to do this. We're just not there yet.
If I had a dollar for every physician who said that to me.
You'd be it.
Yeah, we'd be all visiting you in some awesome house somewhere in the Caribbean, probably.
Okay,
so on the,
are we able to proceed to recommendation two?
Thank you.
Yeah, I have one issue relating to safety concern.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just want to tie back to one of my previous comments. I have unequivocally seen EHRs that reference bad data sets, and the AAP's position on using bad data sets is not to. And so that's the citation issue is one that I think it's important. I understand if you have a patient with a particular disease whose growth chart might be different, you take what you can get. But I've heard and seen pediatricians trust that what's displayed on their screen is from a peer-reviewed data set, and it isn't. So that's the safety concern I have with the, I'll call, uncited growth charts.
Well, so and then to piggyback that on is if we're going to do this as part of certification, it's not just the ability to display it, it's that they get the right number, right? We need to have some, make sure they're what they do display is valid.
Yep.
Yeah, so validate the algorithm that displays the percentile and the place in the growth chart. That's correct. That is an absolute important criterion to be certified, I would say.
Yep.
Very good. And I think then we will move on to the next item. The recommendation two was to compute weight-based drug dosage. And it was about computing drug doses based on appropriate dose ranges, using the patient's body weight and body surface area, and display the dosing weight and the weight-based dosing strategy on the prescription. Of course, when applicable, you know, if you provide an 80-kilogram teenage adolescent with an adult dose, you don't have to provide that dosing strategy. So that's the recommendation. Are there any thoughts about keeping it? And if we keep it, are there any modifications that are needed?
I think we should keep it, but we have to be very careful about the scope. So, for example, are we talking only about liquid medications?
If I may jump into that question right away, I think there's an extension to that that might actually be needed. So I think we talk in tablets and capsules and stuff like that as well.
We need validated rounding rules. Do I round up the 400 milligram tablets because I can't cut them? Do I round to 200? The EHR doesn't know which ones are cuttable and scored. And the other issue is that Vigamox ophthalmic drops is a liquid medication. The weight is totally irrelevant for some of those things.
Yeah. And ADHD drugs, same story. But I think the rounding is an important issue. I think there is from an AHRQ grant, there is a tool that is being revised that has rounding data that are in the public domain that comes from Kevin Johnson's work. So I think that might be something to potentially look into that. But that's just an opinion of one single person. Let's see what the group thinks about dosing based on weight and whether there should be a limitation to that.
I'm in agreement with Sue. The concept here is a good one and an important one. And we participated in Kevin Johnson's work, and pediatric dosing errors occur at a shockingly high rate. Anything we can do to improve them is great work, but we need clinical evidence-based guidance about what to do and to depend on EHRs, as Sue was pointing out, to know the appropriate rounding or dose rounding rules for every single medication is really difficult. It needs to be a reference to a community or, an understood clinical resource. You don't want EHRs making this stuff up.
Well, and the other problem is that it's diagnosis related, right? So it gets really complex because the dosing for amoxicillin for Lyme disease is totally different than it is for otitis media. So I think we should this is important, but we should limit the scope to the use case that people expect it to do every day, which if I have an orally administered liquid medication, it has the ability to calculate per kilogram via dose or day or however you wanted to do it. It shows the math, or at least you know where it came from, whether it's in a tag favored and you apply the rules or whatever, and the weight goes with a prescription. Now, I know that there is I'm going to need someone from the ONC, the NDCPD, whatever. I can't ever say those letters, so you're just going to all have to ignore me when I can't say. The e-prescribing standard has some written standards about sending weight with a prescription. But I have no idea what I haven't looked at it recently, what the details are about. How old does that weight have to be, and what prescriptions does it have to go with? Because I treat pink eye and ear infections over the phone all the time, and the patient's not even in front of me to give me a weight. So we got to figure out some of that nuanced stuff. Maybe the answer is that you have the weight displayed on the prescription and the date the weight was taken. Or somebody's going to have to give us a standard as EHR vendors and say, if the kid is between 0 and 3 years of age, it has to be a weight within 3 months. If it's between, 14 and 15, it can't be more than a year old. We got to get granular here.
So I think those are good points. Thank you both, Sue and Chip. What I heard is let's limit this to liquid medications. What I also heard is we need to make sure that the standard is actually used to transmit weight with prescriptions. And unfortunately, the reality this day and age is that these prescriptions, the standard is not implemented in many pharmacies. even though the AAP had lobbied for that change, I think already 2 or 3 years ago. We need to have a check with what is really truly feasible in this regard. That said, I think the ability to, Sue brought up the issue about indication-specific dosing. You know, I always think about the example for erythromycin that can be used as an antibiotic or as a motility drug with very different dosing. I think the ability for the physician to enter the dose manually per weight needs to be something that needs to be maintained. That way we don't have to worry about indication-specific dosing. And the ability to modify the dosing weight. You know, if the dosing weight is something that's pulled in from the EHR as the latest weight, the ability to modify the dosing weight at the time of the prescription is an important feature that that will prevent you from using outdated weights. Even if you treat somebody over the phone, you can tell the mom to put the kid on the scale, right?
And just a little.
Except a lot of people don't have scales at home, and especially if it's an infant. We don't, let's not make the perfect the enemy of the good, but having the EHR, the ability to support what we think is best practice, we should outline here.
And Chris and Steve, I wonder about just from a minimally viable piece, is that the case where I understand the workflow is not the best, but you would just enter a new weight into the system and then go back and do the prescription, right? Because that's what you're doing. You're more or less saying
that's
that
right.
As of right now, there's a new weight.
That's right. That's how you would do it. And I think that would be from my assumption is that for the vendor, that's implementable, and it allows you to modify the weight if your weight in the system is completely outdated. And it would be a workaround for this particular challenge.
Now, it seems to me in the 2015 certification spec, there is already something that touches on this, but I, you know, again, it's been a long time since I read that. So it's important to know for us to know exactly what is there as far as medication dosing when writing prescriptions. Because I think I remember seeing a product that brought up a calculator in the corner and you could just do your math and then copy and paste it. So does that count? Right? So we got to figure out, we got to be granular. EHR vendors will build what we say, but we got to be specific about our ask.
Other thoughts?
Just as an aside, it's a very mild point, but the relationship of a weight and or height to today's visit, when you haven't been able to record that did come up during the what was the program? The Keep Kids Healthy, the Michelle Obama weight program that's still around. When they wanted to calculate a BMI at every visit, and kids' heights are not taken at sick visits as a rule, and so the AAP did give some guidance about how far apart height and weight can be based on age, and I have that document somewhere. If this comes up, it could be a little bit helpful to with our thinking, but I know that information exists.
And then the other question I have is, do we really want to go BSA, or if this is an ambulatory spec, do we just say weight-based? Right, because how many drugs given to kids on a regular basis in the ambulatory setting are calculated on body surface area versus weight base?
I think that's a very good point. Both of those are very good points. I think the majority of body surface based drugs that I have seen prescribed in the past include oncology drugs. And for a minimally viable recommendation, that seems far-fetched.
Right.
Other thoughts?
And just to expand on that one point, I think the patient safety versus accuracy and speed and being pediatric supportive in the ambulatory setting. This is another example of where the inpatient and outpatient needs differ, even though they are very similar. On the oncology end of things, having a tool that can help make some of these very complex calculations and avoid an error that can kill a child in a hospital, that's vital. But in the world that Sue and I live in, even when a physician makes a substantial mistake, the way the process works is those mistakes are almost always mitigated by the pharmacies. And so on an ambulatory end, even though the mistakes can be dangerous and are plentiful, it's really more about how do we make sure that the pediatricians are operating, they're using an EHR that isn't slowing them down, isn't really tricky for them. And I presume that's in part of the goal here, to say, if you know, we're supporting this pediatric initiative, it's to be a better pediatric EHR. And those two needs are subtly different to me. They both overlap. There's a huge Venn diagram there, but it colors or flavors the focus a little bit for me.
Well, and I agree. And some of this is usability, and you know that's a hard place for certification to go. But again, if you say you support weight-based dosing because there's a field for a weight and it gives you a calculator and you can do all that, does that count? Right?
Exactly. That's what we see. Sue and I see that all. I see that all the time. Yeah. Like that's right.
So I think what I hear is that we are looking at the recommendation that allows a pediatrician to pull in the weight or enter a new weight, define the dose per weight that he or she wants to use, and have the system automatically calculate the dose for this patient and transmit not only the prescription with the final dose, but also transmit in one form or another, whether it's in a metadata format that contains the weight, or if it's just an additional information that might be free text, transmits the information about how this dose was derived. That also includes the original weight that was used for the calculation. That allows a pharmacist downstream to replicate the decision-making process. It allows a pharmacist to double-check it and mitigate any errors that could have occurred in the process and would result in significant safety improvements. And that would exclude surface-based dosing. It would exclude complicated rounding and dispensing information at this point, and would focus on mainly liquid medication.
Oral medications. Liquid oral medications.
Yeah.
So I have a question though. Do we have the purview to do that? Because if you're talking transmission to the pharmacy, that's the NCPDP standard that we don't have any way to play with, do we?
Well, you know, I mean, what I was hoping you would agree with is that, you know, there's always the other comments that go on the prescriptions, you know, this dispensing information, any additional instruction that you want to do, that you could at least use that for to show your work, how you arrived at the dose.
So I agree, but I want to look at, there is a character limitation in that field. And I don't know, it would be interesting to find out, and the pharmacy people could tell us maybe, how often people come up against that character limitation or what it is, and if it's reasonable to also include. The other thing that gets really weird is sometimes when you put free text in that comment field, but there's weird characters like a time sign or an equal sign, it breaks stuff. So whenever you're transmitting data, we got to make sure that we're playing within the realm of the script. And Shelly, what's her name? She was at the ONC meeting from the Pharmacy Association. Parnell, Shelly, I can't remember her last name, would probably be able to help us there. But I think that if we're even going to wander down there, we need at least that information about what's possible.
So what I hear is we need to do more research. We need to get an expert from the pharmacy side in there to help us with the transmission process.
Yep. Yeah, I'd love to hear more about how much is on the pharmacy receiving end and how much is on the EHR sending end. You know, I think we can put leverage on the EHRs to at least send, and, you know, cause, and we can then focus on the pharmacies receiving properly.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the comments that Al had put together with the recommendation, and he refers to the NCPDP script version 10.6. Limits the ability to prescribe all oral liquid medication only metric standard units of milliliter, not cc, and it has this structured codified SIG format that can exchange waste-based calculations. So the format exists in great detail and could support this. The question is, you know, how do we get it used on the receiving end? And I think that's the critical piece there.
Yep.
So, I would defer this to, for the time being, for we need to do a little bit more research, and we probably need Al's input on that as well. So question to Sam, is there, or any other of the other ONC staffers, are there any other things that, oh, we need to go and so sum this up. So the recommendation is, I hear that the recommendation is to keep this. Is that the consensus on the call?
Yes.
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 Yep.
Yep.
And we defined it to with its limitations. And we have some more work to do in the transmission aspect. The other question is, are there any safety concerns, any issues that we need to think about, talk about before we move on?
I think there's still some significant safety concerns when it comes to usability. We're all familiar with them, especially if we define this in such a way that someone can just have a calculator over in the corner. And there's any sort of human transcription potential. You know, this is one of the primary safety nets in the safety hole for EHRs, but I don't think there's anything we haven't discussed or we haven't considered when it comes to safety concerns.
So then I would say that we add the term that it needs to be integrated into the in the prescription and the prescribing process, and it can't be a standalone that requires transcription. Would that eliminate your concerns?
At least
that would certainly alleviate a lot of them, yeah.
Okay, good.
So I have one other comment, and I don't know if we even want to go there, but you know, what do we do about the calculators that calculate to 5 decimal points? Nobody can give a patient a 4.7326 mLs of a drug.
You know, Sue, I solved this problem many years ago for a bunch of hospitals that were on eclipses. Their rounding tool was god awful, and we came up with an algorithm that made sure that we would never round more than 10% and that we would give decimal points within the reasonable range. So my take on this is that decimal points that are more than two numbers from the leading numeral usually tend to be not useful. I can see if I can dig that algorithm that we had out again, but I think there needs to be a warning against useless precision rounding, right?
Yep.
Yes, you should not be able to round to more than someone it's humanly possible able to measure.
Well, and Kevin
measuring tools.
Yeah, Kevin Johnson's study just really hammered this home, especially when, you know, you look at the average deviation of a tablespoon in a family's household. It's actually about 100% deviation in volume.
And well, we should never dose anything in tablespoons, right? We should always. I think we should include that everything should be measured in milliliter.
Yes, when we, but you know, the reality is, unfortunately, too many parents say.
Can we make it say that it's actually measured in small M and capital L and displayed that way, which is the standard? Because I've also seen that being ugly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the standard nomenclature, right?
That's correct.
I think that's actually one of the it's one of the add-ons down below for this one, as I recall. They want a force metric.
Yeah, I think I saw that somewhere too. So the small m, large L, I think that should be part of the recommendation. And we should not allow any other units of measures for liquid doses. Okay. If there are no other comments, is there anything else on the ONC side that we need to address here that we haven't, or is it time to move on?
I have one quick one, really fast. On this entry, this is for recommendation number 2, it links to the child EHR format. It specifically links to the systems shall provide the ability to present alerts for lab results outside of the pediatric specific normal values for this item. And we haven't discussed anything relating to that. And that's one of the questions we're being asked to consider here. And so, Sue, you know, I'll say, Sue, do you see the need for out-of-range lab values to be displayed during the prescription process?
I think that is a huge chew and doesn't belong here.
Yeah, it seems out of place to me, too.
Well, I mean, I think it came from initially people, you know, renal clearance adjusted dosing.
That's exactly right. That was exactly my thought.
But now you're going into pulling in data from problem lists, and is it active or not? I think this is a full error to go down here at this point.
Yep, it's Pandora's box on this one.
Okay.
So I have one other thing, and I don't remember if this was a criteria of 15 cert. Somewhere along the line, a lot of to get around that sort of clearance and like what is the right peak per kilo per day was having at the point of prescribing the ability to have clinical decision support for best guidance. So like having a hyperlink to the NLM or Lexicomp or one of those tools that help the prescriber who's writing a prescription they're not used to the dosing for can look it up, or if you had a patient who had renal clearance issue. Something tells me that was in the cert spec, but we should probably look at that because to me that's more helpful if a user with a click over the prescription name or the RX norm or whatever can go to somewhere else to get education and information to make smart decisions. That's very helpful.
And, you know, Sue, you know, yeah, what that links into with CERT is the requirement on any alert to provide your hyperlinked citation. I don't remember the item there, but Sue's recommendation is really great, and I think it lines up as well.
And that information is in the NLM in a public domain and other places, and it's coded data, so you can get hyperlinks that are easily integrated to those sources for prescribing assistance.
All right.
Yeah, and there, for this particular item, there are two standards, CDS hooks, which is where everybody's kind of moving toward, and the old one is HL7's info button.
All right. I see the screen changing, and it looks like we're going to recommendation 3.
Chris, Can I just interject for a quick moment,
process-wise?
So as we work through these, it occurs to me, and I thank you, Chip, for calling our attention to item number 2 for the supplemental for recommendation 2 with the group indicated that this did not belong there per the question where we ask about the relevance of it. We did not visit the supplementals for priority number 1. If there are any of the 3 that are listed as for the supplementals for recommendation 1, we can circle back to this on the next call so we can keep moving. But if there is a recommendation to remove any of 1, 2, or 3 as a supplemental for recommendation 1, we would note that as well.
Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, thank you. So I think what we'll do is as we work through these, we will concur, get the consensus of the group to retain the recommendation, should everyone consent. And then if any of the identified alignment or proposed criteria as bulleted out should be removed, we can note that. If there is a supplemental that the group feel is not relevant and should not be listed, we will note that as well. Thank you.
Okay. Item 3, recommendation 3, is to the ability to document parental and guardian notification or permission. The description is that the system shall provide the ability to document parental or guardian notification permission for consenting minors to receive treatments as required by institutional policy jurisdiction law. Requirement is to really identify information about parents and guardians and their family relationship data.
So I didn't read it that way. So to me, this is 2 things, one of which is kids have complex families. Instead of just having, one guardian or one parent or 2 parents, I sort of see this as a many-to-many match, right? Like you want to be able to say this kid has a father, this kid has a stepfather, this kid has a mother.
Sue. I just realized I was caught up in the supplement, and you are absolutely right. This is about the ability. That's why I was sounding a little confused. This is about the ability to record information about all the people that are in the life of this child and have a role in their health care and their upbringing. You are absolutely correct. Sorry, I stand corrected there.
Yeah, and so then the other piece of that, and I don't know if we can go here because there's no standard nomenclature in EHR technology, is what right do they have for medical decision-making for the kid, right? So, and I would love to see us go there, but I don't think that there's an industry standard to say, emergency consent privilege or routine, or it has to be shared, for divorced parents. I mean, it's a mess. So I don't know that we can go there. I think the first low-hanging fruit is a lot of systems now only allowed to put mother and father, and they even have them written that way. And sometimes it's mother and mother, and sometimes it's father and father, and sometimes, to me, it's expanding the ability to include all guardians and caregivers that have relevance for the child's care, including foster parents or, ward of the state.
Yeah, and I think that is included in that original description. It includes foster parents, adoptive parents, guardians, surrogates, custodians, siblings, caseworkers. But so there's a whole list of items, and I think you are very right to point out that there is no standard nomenclature, that at least not that I'm aware of. I'm looking now in the supplement, and I don't see anything there. That looks like it addresses.
Is there a healthcare proxy nomenclature in adult? Because I'm living in the pediatric world.
Actually, I was just working on code status work, and it is just as confusing and just as disorganized as in our work.
Well, is this an issue ripe for fixing? Because then everybody wins, right?
Yep, I think that's a good point. Question is that within our purview? And I have my doubts.
My husband would say scope creep.
Yeah. The Academy or someone related to the Academy, one of the Children with Special Health Care Needs committees a couple of years ago did a bunch of work to define a care plan guideline and template. And I believe some of what they designed, again, some of this was with the AAP money, I believe, spoke to a little bit of this. It was a really great start. I don't know how far it's gone since then, but if we are going to open this can of worms even outside of this discussion here, it might be a good resource, and I can track that down as well.
So my question is, you know, this lack of a standard, again, whether it's a possibility that we can solve this in a quick and pragmatic way. You know, as long as you can record demographics on a person, how to contact them, and what their preferred mode of contact is, the relationship to the child could be something that might not be based on a standard, but that's entered on the fly. So the pediatrician can enter mother, can enter guardian, or what other relationships he or she deems useful in the context of recording something on a child. Would that be feasible on the vendor end?
Yes, but here the problem, we still have the problem that I mentioned when we met in October 2017. The way this is written, the entire feature can be resolved by giving every patient a free text box, because because none of this data is being tied to something that's in a format or transmittable or part of any kind of understood protocol. We can just say, yeah, here's my caregiver box, and you can type in whatever you want there, because we will, by definition, we will fulfill the requirement, which is to record all the caregivers and their information. And
yeah.
I think the spirit of this request is to list and record those caregivers and those sources specifically, and in particular, not just, you know, not just the three-parent situation that we run into, but also any other caregivers, whether it's a counselor or another physician. I think the spirit is that we're gathering more in detailed information so we can create understandings of those networks. You know, oh, how many kids are being referred to this local source? Or, oh, I realize this parent here is also the parent of this child here, so we've got an HPI that needs to be shared. And that does not come across in this requirement.
Yeah. So I think your point is an important one. We want this information documented in a structured way. And I think that should be part of the recommendation.
Including
but I think
role.
And well, the problem is with it should go into a structured field. But my recommendation at this point would be that we do not, because it doesn't exist to our knowledge, we do not refer to a standard for the roles, but we allow the entering of the role into a standard field, but we will allow free text. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so here's what you can do if it's a structured way, right? So anybody can write an SQL and say, show me all my patients who are covered by... And there may be EHR vendors like us that have all of those roles as a pick list, then you can write a query. But there may others who just let people free text, but the practice decides to all call them something else, and you can still do a query that says, in quotes, looks like, you know, foster, right? So it still allows you to do analysis of the data that's not reading a Word document, which is the right answer to the question.
Okay.
And at some point, we push for a standard of what that nomenclature is, and then we push people to actually use them. But we're
that's the work on the next extension of the pediatric certification in 3 or 4 years. ONC is already looking forward to working with us on that. I'm just kidding, but yes, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Other comments?
I want to apologize to the ONC people in advance. You probably didn't have a clue what you were getting into when you invited us to the party, but we appreciate it because you can tell we're passionate about this.
Well,
we can value your passion and expertise, and it is absolutely critical to the process, so thank you.
Yeah, I want to echo this. I am excited about, you know, the level of granularity that we've gone into, and, you know, in order for us to have recommendations that are ultimately implementable and useful to ONC and to children nationwide, we need to go into those issues with at some level of detail to get something that's actually usable. So thanks, guys.
The I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, and you can tell me to stop it if I am, but the initial discussion of this topic, especially way back when, seemed pretty straightforward and easy, especially for people like Sue and me, who this is something you just do when you're an ambulatory peds. You just record all this stuff. And the trickier parts, the much trickier parts to this request, are what's implied by the section where the supplemental part, when we're relating this stuff to tracking parental and guardian notification or permission, recording parental notification of newborn screening diagnosis, authorize non-clinician viewers of EHR data, and document decision-making authority of patient representative. That's the deep end of the pool right now, because
yeah,
it's so difficult to do. It's not even technically hard. It's usability and practicality hard. And that merges into our next item, which is the segmented access of information. There's some overlap there. And so when you're about to ask what things do we want to remove, all of those four supplemental items, I think are things that are really vital for pediatricians. They're just really, really hard to do, especially with all the different state rules. I think they're worth considering, but each one of them, I could pick one at random. I'll pick number three, authorize non-clinician viewers of EHR data. We could talk about that for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I don't know what you want to do about that. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I think this is an important point. I mean, let's be honest. We want, you know, a caseworker, a social worker who's taking care of a child, we want them to be able to access the child's lab values if that's important to the care that they're providing or that the foster family is providing. We, you know, the access to the portal might be critical to get medication refills or to make appointments. So, but they're extremely challenging, right? And I don't think I agree with Chip that out of the box, and this is really the first foray into pediatric functionalities, out of the box, I don't think we can solve all the problems in the world. I think all of them are, all these supplements are important things and important challenges. You know, notification of the newborn screening, for example, is a nightmare currently. You know, we are doing all these newborn screening and people move, people change states, people drop their cell phones. You know, the ability to do these things are logistical workflow nightmares that are not being, that cannot be solved in an EHR. But what we can do is we can provide optimal information that we can add to the EHR about ways of reaching people that touch this child, a child's life, and are important to the child's welfare. So I think your points are really important. We don't want to kill this by making it too complicated.
So I will tell you, having seen a bunch of other systems, that this is going to be an ask of some systems that have never considered this, and they have two contact fields, period, and they're going to have to extend their database to do it. And I think that's where we want to start. You have to at least make this. And so the other question that now goes up to the front, I think that the requirement should state that there is an infinite ability. You can't have, like, contact 1 through 10, and then, sorry, you're not allowed 11th, right? This has to
right.
be an infinitely extensible list to include all the relevant contacts for the family, which
yeah,
is going to be the ask for EHRs that they don't are not built that way now, some of them, but it is a worthwhile gap. And again, I'm going to push us that there is relevance to the adult world here too. So at some point you can have a healthcare proxy that it is three of my children who live in three different states, right? So I think that just has to be, we have to explicitly, and if you don't say that to a vendor, my developers are going to put eight, who would ever have more than eight contacts, right? So let's just say that's got to be an infinitely extensible list.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, it never crossed my mind that somebody might make this limited by a fixed number, but yes, we should be explicit about that.
Now, one other thing I'd like to add is I think that there should be the ability to manage that list over time so that you can either remove or archive or have start and end dates, because sometimes kids go from one foster family to another and that list is not static, right? So that you want to make sure that there's the ability to manage the list and display for the user all currently relevant people. And
I would phrase it, though, that there are active participants on this list and there are those that are historical participants, right? So if you go from foster family A to foster family B, foster family A becomes a historical. And, you know, that's important because they might have signed for immunization consents back then. And it's important that you keep that information. But you are absolutely right. We need to differentiate between those that are active and those that are non-active on this list.
Yep. And just to be clear, we are bumping in again to those four supplemental items down below, all of which are important, all of which are vital. But when we have using a foster family, for example, and it doesn't even have to be a foster family, it could be divorced parents, it doesn't matter. As soon as foster family A is no longer hosting child A, the moment you say they're historical, their portal access to that patient should be shut off. And that's not part of our directive here. We know this intuitively based on the work that we have, but at some point we're going to need a collective understanding about these are the things that trigger data access and data exchange to different parties.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point, Chip. I think it goes beyond the scope. But if we have this information, if we have it recorded, it allows for that to happen downstream, right? And I would refer again to our future work in 3-4 years. That might be something we want to do then.
If we can truly tackle patient privacy and data segregation in 3 or 4 years, I will be delighted.
So the other thing to keep in mind there, right, though, this sets the stage because not every EHR writes their own portal. A lot of people use third-party vendors, and their certification based on the cert criteria by the ONC of portals. So this has a bigger reach, if you will, but I think this sets the stage for doing it correctly.
This is probably a good time to just pause for public comment. If we don't have any comments, we can, of course, come back to the conversation for the last 10 minutes or so. But with that, I'd like to ask the operator to open the public line.
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you so much. And then while we're waiting for folks to dial in, Sam, did you have any last minute or any closing items that we wanted the group to address before we wrap up today?
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. My phone is telling me it may die, so I apologize if I get disconnected. I will call right back in. I think in terms of process, we now understand and can anticipate the flow for the next call, so I want to thank everyone in advance. Steph, in terms of this document, is this going to be made available via Google Docs for people to review or edit? Was that the intent here, or do we do that and send that back out?
Yes, everyone should have access to this. I'm planning to clean up the notes a little bit, but if any members or chairs want to add in comments or questions or answer anything in the document, it will be available to everyone.
Thanks, Beth.
I would just note for the – I apologize. So in terms of more process, we'll be presenting the draft recommendations to the HITECH on March 19th and 20th. Clearly, there's extensive discussion and considerations for each of these recommendations. We may want to begin at the top of the next call by having a general consensus with the understanding that without robust discussion, people may, you know, change. But a preliminary, as part of the preliminary draft recommendations for the HITECH, since we have one more call before that March 19th, a general sense that all the recommendations should be included, or if there's if anyone has thoughts of why any one of them should be removed, we can focus on that. That way, on to the HITECH, we could at least say on that day, you know, the preliminary recommendation is to retain these 10 recommendations or 9 or what have you, and then have some of the considerations that have been discussed shared. With the understanding that we may not get through all 10 by March 19th or 20th. Does that sound reasonable to folks? I have not been able to talk to Chris or Carolyn in advance, so feel free to dissent.
So, Sam, just for one, let me pause that for 1 second. I just want to go back to the public comment to see if we have any.
Oh, sorry, Lauren. Thank you.
Operator, do we have any comments in the queue?
Not at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Lauren.
I will return that question to the co-chairs.
So this is Carolyn. I would say I think if that is something that everyone else on the task force is comfortable with, I can move with that. I would also suggest that folks consider perhaps scheduling an additional meeting or two, so that we can continue to have these very, very valuable discussions about the nuances. I haven't really shared a whole lot of feedback because I'm not an expert in the use of these tools as you are, or a trained pediatrician, although certainly as a pediatric cancer survivor, a lot of these things like measuring body surface area for dosing, you know, are not foreign to me. But as I'm listening to you, I'm putting together a list of actions that this group or perhaps with others can take outside of the ONC task force framework to start addressing some of these considerations. Like there's been a mention for a consensus evidence-based guidelines on which to base your alerts. So perhaps that's an action item that a group can try to work on with AAP or another organization. Perhaps there are things here, algorithm development and validation, that can be parts of fellowships or postdocs for people who are already practicing in pediatrics. You know, I think one really beautiful thing that's coming out of this is that there's a whole pathway forward that is lining itself up in front of us, and we can continue that work to further the development of pediatric EHRs outside of this task force structure, if we know what all those issues are, if we have the discussions where they pop up. So something to consider. I'm certainly open to more meetings if all of you are.
Thank you, Carolyn. And I think these were that was very thoughtful. As to the original question, I just wanted to I think we can we have 7 recommendations that we haven't touched on this call. And I think if people do their homework and look at them and consider them, I think we can take kind of a temperature of the room at the beginning of next call and see if there are any of them that would cause disagreement or controversy, or whether it's uniform agreement to get rid of it. And we could discuss this early so that we ultimately could come up with a summary anticipated outcome for the HITECH meeting. Does that sound like a solid approach to that?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
Good. Then I think we have our marching order. Everybody will have to do some homework and look at the remaining 7 recommendations and make up his or her mind whether they think this is valuable and should remain, even if it requires modifications or edits. And then we can identify things that might be considered valuable by the group, and we'll come up with at least a predicted anticipated outcome. All right. Back to the folks at ONC to close us off.
Great. Thanks, everyone, for your time today. Let's see. I think we have our next meeting next week. But yeah, we'll make sure everyone has the invitation for our next meeting, as well as having access to the Google Docs. So thanks again for your time today, and we'll adjourn.
I have one quick question. I've had some other people interested in, and I see there's a public ability to do this. Is this an open forum that anyone can join to listen to the conversation, or is it limited to certain stakeholders?
Yeah, no, anyone can join from the public. They can find the dial-in information on our website on healthit.gov.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Yep.
They can listen, and if they want to comment, of course, they can do so at the end of the call.
Great. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.